When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You can just get those bodies to calm down. We can talk. That'll be nice, don't you think?
I just couldn't keep it together.
Well, you should have been faster, because that's me, isn't it?
Pull to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
Your arms are a bit too long and your mouths are a bit too wide, but are you stabilizing?
No, it's too much. It's like looking into a furnace.
I just want to talk to you.
I can't argue.
That's what I was going to say.
The devil's in the details.
Yeah, isn't it just?
Allons, as idiots say.
Hello, and welcome to Pull to Open, an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who in random order, normally, but this is not so normal tonight. Tonight is the premiere of Wild Blue Yonder, the second special in the 60th anniversary trilogy, and we have thoughts.
Yes, we do.
Did I say my name?
You did not. I'm starting to actually be suspicious about that. Are you Pete Paschal? Where were you born?
I was born in, I'm not sure, Edmonton, something.
Ah, you're not the real Pete. You're the creature from beyond the universe. Okay, and I am Chris Taylor. I'm the real Chris Taylor. All you other Chris Taylors are just imitating. And yes, The Wild Blue Yonder. Who would have thought a multi-doctor story for the 60th anniversary and not in the way you were expecting?
Definitely not in the way you're expecting. It was it was different. I mean, just off the bat, it was super smart of Russell T. Davies to just simply not reveal anything about this one.
Yes.
And you know, all we had was that one picture with the robot in the background, which made us think the robot would be super important and relevant.
Right.
And honestly, I completely forgot about the robot until I just started talking about it just now. Like, oh yeah, there's a robot in it.
The robot was part of the look and feel of this very look and feel driven episode, right? It's very interesting. I don't know. So here we are in what I might call the heaven sent era of Doctor Who. Like now we know, thanks to the Doctor Who magazine poll, that heaven sent is our favorite Doctor Who of all time. Like that's the new reigning champion, right? So
well, collectively, yes.
Yeah.
As Doctor Who fans have spoken, yes.
Yes. So I think that going for what felt to me like quite a heaven sent ish idea, whether the execution, you know, lived up to the idea, I thought a very, very bold choice, wrong-footed us in terms of what we want from an anniversary special. As I say, gave us a multi-doctor story. By the way, how many Tennants are there now? There's Metacrisis Tennant, there's 10 and 14, and now there's a creature pretending to be Tennant, not counting perhaps the creature at midnight who liked to echo what Tennant was saying.
Or John Smith.
My goodness. Is David Tennant just trying to be the most Doctor Who? If not, you know, if not the best, then at least the most.
He's definitely proliferant. He's a bit greedy in terms of his roles and his time on screen anything he's on with Doctor Who. But this time he was helped by a lot by Russell T. Davies and Catherine Tate.
And Catherine Tate. And I got to say, I think I'm correct in remembering that at the end of our hot take on the Star Beast, you said what we really want to see is more Tennant and Tate.
Yes, I did say that. Or things along those lines. And
boy, did you get it.
Man, I completely got it. Yes. And you know what? I'm super grateful I did. Because honestly, like, I really admire what Russell T. Davies did here, not just in terms of keeping this a secret, keeping this you know, very under wraps, but also like really using his time. Because as I was watching this episode, it was occurring to me, you know, we've only got one more adventure with these guys.
Yep.
We've only got the giggle, and it feels like we've only just gotten going, and Tennant's just really loving his time in his TARDIS. And I, you know, the thing I love about this episode is it just gives both of those leads so much rope, so much room to stretch out and do not just interesting things with their characters. And we'll get to that and the things they sort of revealed about themselves, but also fun things to do as not their characters.
Yeah.
So when, you know, whether it's just playing, big prosthetic hands, which were practical effects, by the way, at least for some of it.
Some of it. Also, the robot was a very practical effect. I did love the weathering on the robot. Look, you know, zooming out, big picture, I think that this is it's a slow burn. I've been thinking about it, you know, for the couple of hours after I've watched it, and it's getting better the more and more I think about it. I think if you have a negative take, listener, on Wild Blue Yonder, you know, first of all, that's totally legit, but also maybe let it marinate for a bit. Like, this is, it feels a bit like Midnight in that sense, and perhaps a little bit like Heaven Sent in that sense. And that, you know, it's smaller, it's more contained, even though it contains the world's longest corridor. My goodness.
Super appropriate for Doctor Who.
I know, right?
I mean, I know. A little bit of meta stuff going on there.
Yeah. Peter Capaldi ran out of corridor and then he said, never again. Two generations later, world's longest corridor. But yeah, it's one of the scariest things you find in a lot of fictions is this notion that, you know, your enemy is yourself. Right. And, you know, I'm thinking of The Prisoner, spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, where I went to when you said that.
Right. Yeah. And so, also,
it kind of betrays both of our ages.
And I'm going to do it again. Empire Strikes Back.
There you go.
Luke Skywalker revealing himself under Vader's, you know, in the dream on Dagobah. But yeah, you know, that kind of vibe, like, it's super creepy when not just the Doctor, but also Donna get to be their own villains. In continuity terms, we talked about this a little bit last week, about the relation to the Chibnall era. This was heavy on the Chibnall, right? This was the Flux was mentioned, and the Timeless Children was referenced. What did you think about that?
I actually really liked it, because it is one of those things, because I don't want the show to ignore it, in a sense, even though I do and I don't, right? Like, I obviously, you know, I've said many times I wasn't super thrilled with the direction Chibnall went specifically with that. We've already dissected that to death, but it's part of the show. It's part of, kind of, like, you can't just say it didn't happen.
Right. You got to say, yes, and, which is what Chibnall himself did not say with the sudden destruction.
And I like that Davies isn't interested, at least at this point, in sort of doing sort of plots and twists and, like, you know, whether it's reversing the thing or expanding on the thing that's to come, maybe, or maybe not, maybe. But I do like that emotionally, you know, he's looked at what's happened and he's trying to find, where would this character be after these really big monumental events? 'Cause that matters. And that's the most important thing. So to me, like, there are so many good scenes in this, and usually it's with Tennant, frankly, but I think this one and the one a bit later, I'll get to it when, you know, they're facing their doppelgangers across the glass partition. But this one where it's such a brilliant scene, I got to say. So this is the scene where, again, Donna and the Doctor are separated. They're each confronted by their opposite doppelganger, and Donna is trying to get something out of him. And you think, it's the opposite, right? That Tennant in this scene is the doppelganger, because he says, well, I'm from Gallifrey. You know that. We all four of us were talking about that. And so you feel like, oh, he's obviously the fake, because we kind of know where he's going with this. But what happens is she dissects it a little bit, and then it's more him not wanting to face what he's found out with the Timeless Children arc, where he's not from Gallifrey. And I thought that was just such a smart way, just plot-wise and character development-wise, to do it. I mean, I was just kind of blown away by that, honestly.
I mean, what seems to be a developing theme of the overall trilogy, and we'll get to whether it should or should not be a trilogy in the Codex much later in the show. Perhaps we can talk about that before we go. But there's a theme developing of identity, this whole question, the Doctor doesn't know who he is anymore. And that's, I mean, that's doubly true if you include the Timeless Children, right? That's piling on the questions, you know. So Jodie, for, you know, two of her seasons, was struggling with that question of her identity. And now Tennant is struggling with why this face again, which is getting repeated. And obviously, we're going to get some kind of payoff there.
Might be struggling also a bit with his sexuality, which was,
yes.
I found hilarious. Where he was just like, oh, yeah, Newton was totally hot.
Yeah.
And like, am I that now? And like the perfect response by Donna, just like, well, it was never really that far.
Yeah, it was, exactly. I love that, too. I think it's a great way to handle it. I think it's a great way to also prepare the ground for shooting. For everything that's coming, like one thing that Rose said in the Starbeast about the Doctor is all these things and more.
Though who knows how Shooty's going to play it, right? He could be the manliest manly Doctor there's ever been, but you know, we'll see. Given what's sort of been said off screen, I guess has already been said about that, but we'll see.
This may be going from big picture to tiniest picture of all, but what do you think of the little shot of Shooty and Shooty's TARDIS with the jukebox?
Oh, you mean in the next time?
In the next time trailer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was good. I mean, it's such a big, I think Davies is very smart. He's such a showman, but he's also just smart about his own show. Like, he knows that we're all expecting it. He's not trying to be coy about it. That, yes, of course, he's already, every trailer has featured Shooty in some way. It's good. It's great. We're expecting him. I think my idea/hope that there would be kind of a multi-doctor story before he regenerates, it looks like that's getting dashed pretty quickly. I don't know. It was always a sort of a fringe theory. But
unless it is multi-doctor in the sense of Shooty's Doctor coming back to save him. I'm holding on to that theory. We will see 15 later in his time stream at some point in this episode.
Well, it does seem to suggest there's more than, say, the end of Legopolis. Like, it's not just Shooty Gatwa standing there at the last few seconds of an episode. And that I feel like there's going to be more in some form. So even though the idea of, like, they're going to, like, have him come back or whatever before he regenerates is still a possibility, a fleeting one. At the very least, I think they're going to do a little more after he regenerates, even if they don't do that.
Well, let's remember that the one line of dialogue we absolutely know that he's going to say at some point, probably next week, is, can someone tell me what the hell is going on?
Well, especially since he has the undone tie in both of those moments, right?
Yes.
So that looks like there's going to be, like, that was a real scene, which I don't think we were 100% sure on.
Right.
I guess we were when Davies revealed that the background wasn't the real background. So,
So what RTD has said about the giggle is that it's like, we thought this one was scary, and it did have, you know, we'll talk about how successfully scary it was in a second, but whatever this is, like, the giggle doubles it. You know, that is super scary and just mad and all over the place. Mad, to use a very favorite RTD word. He seems to like a lot to write in scripts.
Seemingly brought about by the Doctor doing something with salt at the end of the edge of the universe, which I don't know if I love that. But here's what I do love about this episode. There's a lot to love about this episode. But one of the things is upping the scale.
Yes.
And doing one of those great sci-fi things. And I was just thinking about this. It's Doctor Who is one of the only shows that can do this. I'm not saying it's the only show, but it's the only show that can do it, honestly, anytime it wants, which is to say, like, the cosmological scale that they went for here, which you technically could do in other shows, maybe Star Trek's kind of done it here and there. But for Doctor Who, like, really anytime it wants, I can just, okay, let's go to the edge of what they're saying is the edge of the universe here, which is far away from any other star, any other galaxy. They're way out, and there's essentially nothing. There's a void that is beyond understanding, really, the scale of this void.
And it's not necessarily a void. It's that light has not reached there yet. No light from any star has reached there. And I love that it's the episode took a very non-educational educational approach, you know, like it, that was worked into the script in a very clever way. You see a lot of kids suddenly getting very interested in cosmology at that moment, in the sort of question of like, well, what is on the edge of the, what is beyond light, you know?
Well, and to the what we were talking about earlier, I think it amps up the fear.
Yeah.
You know, because you're just so isolated. You just suddenly establish, okay, there's nothing here. There, no one's coming to rescue them. There's no help. And getting outside the ship isn't escape. Mm-hmm. Like, you're basically just marooned, and it's essentially a death sentence anyway. So I really like that idea. And, you know, there's Doctor Who episodes, the Doctor Who books. There's actually a book called... I forget what it's called. It's a Capaldi book, but it does something similar in The Voids Between Galaxies.
Interesting.
And it's a really kind of smart thing to do. And again, Doctor Who can get away with it like anytime it wants to, because of the nature of the TARDIS and the show. So yeah.
So I haven't had a moment to look this up, but you probably know this. HADS, is that new? Okay, remind me. It sounded familiar. Just tell
me. We did the Crotons.
Oh, that's what it sounds familiar from.
It's from the Crotons. I don't think it's mentioned again, even though some episodes imply it's been used, until Cold War. So Cold War is this second, I think the second mention, and that's... The TARDIS sort of ends up in the South Pole, and that's how they have to stay on the submarine in that one.
I think the memory card that I have inserted in this brain only has room for 100 Doctor Who stories. So, sorry, Crotons, you got pushed out by something else.
The function of the HADS, how it works. Now that's a bit flexible, as is everything, including Donna's memories. Right. Mm. So this, I think it worked for me mostly that it sort of disappears right away. I like that the Doctor explains that he doesn't leave it turned on, because then he would just never land anywhere.
Yep.
So he just kind of turns it off, because it's like, come on, like, I'm the Doctor.
Health and safety, schmelt and safety.
Well, and I also like that the way it comes back at the end, that the apparently the danger is gone for quote unquote for reasons. And it comes in, and you know, you kind of have to squint a little bit at that point, because like the climax hasn't happened yet, because that's sort of the implication, is that the climax hasn't happened. Like but the implication earlier, sorry, is that once basically the plot is resolved, then the TARDIS will come back. But to have it come back right before that kind of works. I mean, it's a bit of a twist, and you kind of, again, you have to squint to see it. But I didn't hate it. I thought it was fine. I didn't like that the TARDIS effects were getting, like, they had to sort of rotate, and there was a little more CGI when it appeared. I think that was a little over the top those couple of times toward the end. You didn't need that.
I wonder if you had the same reaction as I did to the whole Mrs. Bean thing, which I thought was wonderfully played, because you're sort of like trained to expect that the one saying it's just funny because it is the actual Donna, and then that turns out to be the wrong thing. That's a wrong footing. And I love that, because there's this whole, the whole purpose of this episode seems to put you off balance as to who is actually who. And I love that. I love the fact that the real Donna was like actually trying to, was actually sounding a little more plastic by like trying to explain herself. Like, you know, because clearly you can sort of imagine it, right? In that situation, you'd be a little bit fearful. You would actually explain the logical answer. You're like, no, really, I'm me. Like, you're not so loose and relaxed and just humor's just funny, man. You know? But the monster was. So that was one of a few moments where I got midnight-ish vibes, where like, you know, these aliens are just so totally alien that it's just, it's offset, it's spooky in that kind of way, right?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, absolutely. I gotta say, like, they paced it really well. I felt like, well, maybe not at the beginning, because I was sort of thinking, oh my God, this is one of the slowest episodes ever for the first like 10 or 15 minutes. But I think you kind of need that, right? You almost need this like get on with it vibe to really get into the things that come later. Mm. And once, you know, they're separated and you're constantly guessing who's who, I think it just sort of goes to another level. And honestly, the performances go to another level. And I really got to rave more about, like, I've been raving about Tenet a lot in our Tenet episodes that we've done. But this one, like, wow, like, I love the bit where he is trying not to think.
Yes.
And they goad him into thinking, and it's so Tenant, it's so doctorish, like, he plays it so well, and then he just kind of gives up on it. Okay, I can't. Like, I've got to do this. I've got to figure this out.
That did make me think, you may, when we worked together at Mashable, Pete, you may remember I did competitive meditation. I've written about that, and that definitely had this sort of meditation deathmatch vibes of like that. That was the doctor's call. Just don't think. Oh no, that's a thought, you know. I love that, you know, it really, really spoke to me. Okay, so let's talk about that cold open with not yet Sir Isaac Newton. Did you also get like Moffat-y vibe? Like, it felt like he drafted Moffat in just to write that cold open. Like that felt like a very Moffat-y. Wait, I can't even remember if it was a cold open. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but like it felt like a long Moffat cold open to have that whole thing. And let's talk Mavity. Is this is it a red herring, or is it just an attempt to create a meme?
Like, no, your read doing it? On this being super Moffat-y, I think, is dead on. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably absorbed a little bit from Moffat's run if he didn't actually get Moffat to write this for him.
That's because right. RTD momentarily morphing into Stephen Moffat in front of him. Who's the real one?
Yeah, I just think we're never going to hear about Mavity again. I think it's just silliness. And or though maybe he'll keep it as a running joke for his run. Mm. But I think at some point, you're just going to, like, I don't think he's going to resolve it. I think at just some point off screen, you have to think that, like, they go back and correct Newton so that we could just start saying gravity again. But it was just kind of done because he thought it was hilarious. And it is pretty hilarious. It's a pretty good joke.
It's a good joke. And I would like to add my voice to the chorus online that are already calling for the Doctor Who Wikia to change its entry for gravity. I think that would be hilarious. Come on, guys. Let's join in.
Starring Sandra Bullock.
Yes, I love it. I love all. I mean, it has started a meme, right? So mission accomplished in that regard. But what we also, so the randomizer
Chris,
has set
Chris,
us up.
I just want to say, I think that's a mid idea.
It's mid. It's pretty mid.
Mate. It's a mate idea.
It's a mate. Oh dear. you're extending it too far, like two long arms at the moment. Oh gosh, I don't even know.
My reach may have exceeded my grasp.
Oh dear. Oh, it's getting worse and worse. Yes. No. I think we also. So the randomizer has been setting us up for this trilogy, I think, in a lot of interesting ways. One of the ways is that we went to the pirate planet where the Doctor talks about having met Newton.
It's true. Yeah. And dropping apples on his head.
So which is it, Doctor? Was he replacing himself in his own time stream? Was Tom Baker's Doctor having a forward memory? Was he just lying? Rule number one. What do you think? What's your take?
Well, here's the thing. That first apple that falls on Newton's head, we don't know what dropped that one.
Good point.
You know, so maybe Tom Baker's in the tree dropping things, and then Tennant shows up. Now, that does screw up Baker's story because he says, you know, Newton told him to get out of the tree and that he explained it to him later at dinner. Maybe parts of that are embellished. Maybe the whole thing was. But it doesn't necessarily. One, maybe he just joins him for dinner later. Two, maybe it was just some other day, you know. So maybe this was a different apple dropping incident for Newton. Maybe he's often under that tree with people ready to...
Well, maybe in a very timey-wimey way, it is Tom Baker's Doctor who comes back and corrects the mistake, drops another apple, and is like, no, gravity, listen to the grr. Mavity. I'm not even sure how he got that.
Yeah, we'll take it.
At some point, I'm going to look up the origins of the English word gravity, because something tells me that it precedes Mr. Newton. But whatever. It's, you know, this is a show where Agatha Christie meets a wasp. It's not necessarily historically accurate.
So one thing we didn't talk about, and I think, you know, we'd probably just end up raving about it anyway, is the scene with Wilf at the end.
Oh, gosh. There were tears. Yeah. There were so many tears.
Oh, yeah. Not much has made me, you know, well up a bit, but, like, it was just such, you know, that scene just really got me, too. Like, it was just so good to see him. And, you know, just everyone's reaction, Tennant hugging him, everyone into it. It was just... It was so good. And also I like that they used it as a bit of a tease for the plot of the giggle. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that he's the one who's sort of keeping vigil there for them. And then you actually see it sort of blurred in the background, those weird statue things, whatever they are. And then, you know, everyone going nuts. And then this is setting up the whole thing with the toy maker. It's great. Did you see that Russell Davies came out and said, you know, basically that's it. This is the scene that they shot with him. And there aren't, and I like that he did that so that we're not expecting more, that this is all they had time for. And here it is.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, one and done.
One and done, but so great. So good to see him. And I did get, again, speaking of where the randomizer has taken us recently, I did get Three Doctors vibes. Like it's very William Hartnell. When you look at the behind the scenes video, where they talk to Bernard Cribbins, there is something he said that gives you the impression that he was reading from cue cards, that he had to read his lines from cue cards. And so, you know, very much the frail Hartnell that we see in the Three Doctors, but how good would it have been if they'd been able to have Hartnell in a wheelchair, you know, on set, like, you know, be able to see interacting with him one more time.
We're just happy to see him as fans.
I mean, I'll take him anywhere.
Even back then, exactly. He was in, you know, in his time, Eddie, doing whatever, but we'll take it. And with Wilf, the same deal. Like, he was there. Yeah.
Were you expecting it here? Because I was expecting it at the end of the giggle. I was expecting Wilf's appearance at the end of the giggle. And RTD wrong-footed us yet again.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know, honestly. Like, I thought, I didn't know until I saw the post from Davies that this was it. Like, I figured we'd see him, and then we'd see him maybe a couple more times in the next episode. So, like, I gotta credit to Davies. I'm glad he just didn't get us expecting more. He basically clarified, you know, that's it. That's all we had. So
I do love them. No, but what I was expecting was that Wilf, if we got one appearance from Wilf, that it would be a, you know, after everything gets wrapped up, a denouement kind of thing, you know, after the trilogy, and maybe before the regeneration. And but then again, you know, the regeneration scene, whatever scene that we get next week of regeneration, and we're clearly going to get one. Now we know, spoiler alert, from the next time trailer, at least there's going to be some sort of regeneration energy hovering around Tennant's face. whatever it is. Obviously, it can't be the same as Tennant's, you know, farewell tour. Like, you know, and also we just got that with Jodie. It's got to be more of a Capaldi-esque, you know, sudden head snap and he's there, right? It has to be, RTD can't repeat himself. And it's clear from this that he doesn't want to repeat himself.
Which, again, I'm like, I almost want it. Like, if we're just getting going, I kind of want a whole season with Donna and Tennant again. Like, I got to say, like, I really like this episode. I really like, you know, the Wild Blue Yonder. Yeah, I had my thoughts about the Star Beast, and some stuff worked, some stuff didn't. To me, this totally worked. And again, credit to Davies. He really leaned into, like, I've got these two leads. I'm going to write a bottle episode where they're just on screen all the time playing all the roles. And it's like, it really, really works. And, you know, again, smart stuff with the practical effects. I like, you know, the neat things about, like, the arms being too long, both in a very overt way and also later. I guess it's a little weird. I don't know. What did you think about Tennant? Like, oh, the arm's too long and it's 0.06 millimeters. That was a little like, you know, I'm Spock or something, noticing everything.
Yeah. Which, you know, the Doctor is often quite Spockish. But I'm curious about, you know, did your kids, did they get scared by the alternate Tennant and Tate and the extendy jaw and the arms and thing? Because that, I feel like that would have creeped me out as a kid.
And they'd never admit they were scared. They're kind of too old now to like do that. Although I think Grace was snuggling in a bit close while the sort of, not necessarily that scene, but just sort of the isolation on the station. But I'll say this, my whole family was riveted and we all came away really liking it. My wife probably liked it the most out of all of us. She was like, oh, wow, that was so good. I mean, she loves Tennant and Donna. They've always been her favorite pair among, you know, she's got good taste. And just, again, seeing them on screen so much and doing so many interesting things, kind of both being themselves and not themselves, just such a smart, smart story to be able to do that.
Indeed. And, okay, couple of closing thoughts on it. First of all, I don't know if you saw in the behind-the-scenes video, RTD talks about, like, at one point he thought of maybe having a cryogenically frozen William Hartnell on the ship. As just throwing in something a bit more anniversary-ish. And he talked about having the guts to say, no, I'm going to stick with my original idea.
Right.
Do you think that's anything? Is that a hint of what we've got coming? Or is it just he's throwing in that red herring or like it was a back-of-the-napkin idea and we shouldn't listen to that?
You know, I think he's just being kind of loose. Actually, I'll confess, I didn't watch The Unleashed or whatever the behind-the-scenes stuff was. So just hearing about that, I think he's just sort of confessing in a very kind of loose kind of way. Yeah, you know, it's the 60th anniversary. You kind of want to pull out wild cards as much as you can or as much as you can get away with them. And he kind of, the fact that he stopped himself, I think was good. Here's the thing. A big ship like that out in a void doing whatever. I mean, that's already lots of stuff to mine for either himself or a future showrunner, right? Like, I feel like that idea, like who put the ship there in the first place? What was the race? Why were they there? Again, they don't necessarily have to ever answer those questions, but it's rich stuff to mine if you want to. And you don't need to throw in another, you know, a doctor there or whatever. Why would he be there? And then, you know, you'd have to sort of fill in a lot of stuff. Then it becomes a thing you have to come back to if you do that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Here, I just like the idea of it's this massive scale thing. And, you know, again, part of the canvas of Doctor Who, should anyone want to fill it in.
Yeah, speaking of the canvas of Doctor Who and the templates of Who and template of New Who, I feel it was interesting that while he was trying a lot of new things with this, it does hew to that sort of template, right? Of you have your sort of like big, bold opening story, which is a bit like Rose, and then you go to something that shows the science fiction extremes that Doctor Who can go to, like the end of the world. Right. And and we saw, you know, Moffat doing that in season 5, in his first season, when he's reintroducing Who, you know, with The Beast Below being the second story that, you know, let's go way out there, many, many, many centuries hence, way out in space. And also in, you know, when he reinvented Capaldi for his final season with the pilots, you know, very self-consciously starting all over again. Right. And then the I believe Smile was the second one there. Right. You know, you go forward and then you go back, go forward and go back. You see this again in New Who when you as a good way to sort of introduce new audiences. Right. Which is what we've got a lot of this time around as well with all the new Disney Plus fans.
Yeah, I got to say, I did think of that. Like, I like the echo mostly with Davies because it's, you know, obviously his new run that his second episode in both his first run and his second run takes these sort of extremes in terms of cosmology and things that the original series just never quite did, even though it sort of tried here and there and didn't quite do it. That just said, why not? Let's go 5 billion years in the future. Let's see these crazy cosmological ideas up close because you can do that with Doctor Who. Just really, really smart. I hope it's not just getting out of his system because I don't want him to do it every week, but I do like that Doctor Who can just kind of, again, do it whenever it wants and just sort of amp up the scale And indeed. Yeah, just really, really loved it.
Well, speaking of scales, yeah. I was going to get the ratings, but you go ahead before we do that.
Oh, I just had one thing. So the way the plot is resolved and they have to run after what's his name, like the other guy, the other tenant, and tenant's catching up to him. He breaks into a run on all fours, which is great. But Jack did ask, and I didn't have a good answer, like, well, why didn't you just do that in the first place? And it is, I will say, that's there's one weak spot in the plot. I feel like it is that he just can't get there in time. That's the resolution. Yeah. The robot just presses the button before the other tenant can get there. And I guess he was always destined. That was always part of it, but it just felt like there wasn't really a decision. You know what I mean? There wasn't really a thing someone had to do to sacrifice something or do whatever to ensure the bad guys lost.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate. Again, RTD doesn't always stick the landing, and he does kind of do, we saw this with Starbeast. You just reverse the destruction of London. Out of other ideas, right? It just, just hit the reverse. Oh, yeah, it's the other doctor can't get there in time. Yeah, whatever, Let's hope that the Murray Gold music and the special effects at this point cover up the fact that it's not really fully resolved necessarily in a satisfying way.
Well, I feel like you could have pretty easily done something here where the doctor, once he breaks into a run as a four-legged thing, like has to accelerate the thing even more or something. So in other words, like that the doctor needs to make some decision that seemingly sacrifices stuff because it's just, that his plan to stop them didn't work. That wouldn't have been too hard to do that, but that's okay. Well, we'll save it for the special edition or whatever, but otherwise so we can get right to the ratings. Why don't you go? Cause I think it's pretty clear where I'm going. Out of five TARDISes.
A hot take rating of five sizzling TARDISes out of five. Yeah, I think I'm gonna give it five because this has potential. And I'm enjoying the way that it's burning in my head. I'm enjoying talking about it. That's often the sign of a good slow burn Who episode. I wouldn't want to underestimate its potential to make the top 10 rankings in future, Doctor Who surveys. It had Midnight-ish vibes. It had Heaven Sent vibes for me, the two-hander to Heaven Sent's one-hander. So five out of five. Same as last week. I guess I'm easily pleased for the 60th anniversary.
Well, no, it wasn't the same. You gave it 6 out of 5 last week.
Oh, six. Oh, good point. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I was just so the extra TARDIS.
Even though it's five.
The extra TARDIS I'm so excited to see it back. Anyway.
I'm right there with you. Like, my five TARDISes, and those TARDISes are spinning like crazy, my friend. The centripetal force of those TARDISes is off the charts. This was amazing. This was just such a smart episode, not just in terms of how entertaining and enthralling it was, and just on an intellectual level as well, but also just a smart thing for Davies to do at this point in his run in this three-part trilogy. Just smart, smart, smart. I mean, that's all I can say about it, because it's like just the fact that he just gave his leads, which he only has a limited amount of time, so much to do. Had them on screen so much. I mean, I wonder how. I mean, they had more time to make these specials, I guess. So I can't imagine they were too annoyed that there was virtually really no other guest cast, right? I mean, there were no other actual people in this episode apart from Wilf at the end.
Apart from Wilf and Newton in the beginning, those were deliberately stuck there as sort of big meaty cold open and closers. Hot closes, very, very cliffhangery.
Just as an actor, you're forced, you cannot phone it in.
Yeah.
You got to be on it every scene.
That's the other thing we see in the behind the scenes, that they had to film, Tate and Tennant had to film every scene twice, or go through every scene twice and be their alien selves and be their real selves. And also knowing all along in their own heads which one they were, still sow enough doubt. So, amazing Doctor Who Oscar-worthy performances from both of them, but doing that on both sides, because this script rises and falls on the performances, and it rose.
It totally rose.
Rose. The occasion.
Too apt.
Yes.
All right, folks. Indeed. Wow, well, we didn't even do housekeeping. We were so excited. We didn't say you should go to pulltoopen.net to get notes on every story, not necessarily these hot takes, but every story you should. And then we didn't say you should follow us on TikTok at pulltoopen and on X at pulltoopen63 and either of those handles anywhere else you might find us on social media. We didn't say go to youtube.com/pulltoopen and leave comments and emojis and all that stuff. What else didn't we say?
Well, we didn't say whether this is officially a new story in the Pulltoopen Codex, right? I just want to do that really quickly. I think our initial take is yes, it is. But then again, you know, we did make Flux all of one story after we saw it all, right? So that's still to come as single codex entry. And I think what I will say is that we reserve the right to change that after we see the giggle, right? Because if the meep is in the giggle and, you know, these creatures are also in the giggle and it sort of feels very pulled together and it's part of some big toy maker plot that we're just sort of seeing the edges of, and you know, if Davies really ties those two other specials in to the third one, then maybe we're talking about a toy maker trilogy. But our initial judgment is probably not.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the idea that all this stuff was a toy maker plot, particularly Tennant's face himself, you know, like the whole regeneration thing, I think that's going to be thrown out. There's going to be some other twist, and there will be a reason that he regenerated back into Tennant, but I don't think it's just the toy maker was manipulating things. That's my prediction right now. So we'll find out in a week.
Sticking with my toy maker theory, but yeah, I cannot wait to meet you back here next week for the next hot take on the giggle, where Pete, I think we should order some helium for this, maybe some laughing gas. I don't know. But yeah, we will be giggling aplenty on our next hot take, and we will be continuing our random adventure and our adventure on all the socials. Did we mention them all?
I think we mentioned all the ones we care to, but yeah, folks, if you like big cosmological stories with David Tennant,
oh my goodness,
we're also got the regular podcast coming up next week, which is of course the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit, where we will have a guest to dissect those stories with us. Ellie Blackwood from TikTok. So it'll be good.
Yes, I'm very excited about that, especially because Ellie has expertise in astrophysics. So we're gonna go to school. We're gonna go to black hole school on the Impossible Planet, and maybe she'll also be able to talk to us a little bit about the very edge of the universe where the Wild Blue Yonder went.
Oh man! So,
wow.
Tennant at the extremes. That's what we do here on Pulltoopen.
Love it.
Guys, this has been fantastic. Please, of course, follow us on those socials that I mentioned. Go ahead, rate the podcast. Give us a review. We like reviews. That's what I mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're in the Apple Podcasts app. We enjoy reviews. I'm seeing 5 stars in front of me. But, you know, go ahead, give whatever you want. And again, come on back for some more Doctor Who commentary just as soon as you can.
All right, looking forward to giggling with you all next week. Take care.